Well, in just under half an hour, the jury at the Anglo-Irish Bank trial will resume its deliberations in the cases of two former directors, Pat Whelan and William McAteer. The big story, of course, yesterday was that the former Anglo-Irish chairman, Sean Fitzpatrick, was acquitted of all charges of providing unlawful financial assistance to the so-called Maple 10. We'll bring you news of any further developments, of course, in the next 2 hours, if there are any, at the Central, the Dublin Circuit Criminal Courts. We're joined there, from there by our legal affairs editor, Orla O'Donnell. Orla, good morning to you.
Good morning, Sean.
Now, I suppose a lot of tension in the air today again after yesterday's development. Just take us through the arguments that Sean Fitzpatrick's lawyer made, particularly as to why he should be acquitted by the jury. Essentially, it was a case that he was non-executive as chairman, and the whole prosecution case seemed to hinge on just one phone call.
That's right. I suppose Sean Fitzpatrick's case hinged on his knowledge of the transaction at the centre of this case, what he knew about it. His lawyers pushed very hard this idea that he was the chairman, he was a non-executive director, and he was not involved in the day-to-day running of the bank. They said there would have been murder. He told Gardaí there would have been murder if he had interfered in the day-to-day running of the bank after he stepped down as chief executive and became chairman and David Drum took over. He also said that he was in France on July the 9th, 2008. When he got a call from David Drum about this transaction, telling him that they'd finally found a solution to the problem of Sean Quinn's interest in the bank. He said he didn't get much information. He was told, after inquiring about the worth of these people that were going to buy the shares, he was told they were 10 high net worth individuals. He wasn't told the names. He was told he didn't need to know because they were keeping it tight. He said he wasn't told anything about the extent of the lending or how much they would have to repay. He was told the bank had taken appropriate advice. Everything was kosher. The financial regulator was aware. And his lawyers made the point that he had been singled out for prosecution, that everyone had been happy with this deal. There was no problem with it until the financial climate changed. Now, the prosecution argued that he was a director of the bank. Directors have a duty to ensure that a company complies with company's legislation, that he had enough information to know this loan was outside the ordinary course of the bank's business because of the scale of it, because of the purpose of it, that if he didn't have the information, he should have asked David Drum more questions, and he didn't take reasonable steps to stop the breach of the legislation. When in the end, obviously, the jury believed the defence argument. The judge had said to the jury that in relation to Sean Fitzpatrick, they would have to be satisfied beyond reasonable doubt that he knew before this scheme went ahead that Anglo was going to provide this funding to the 10 individuals and that the overarching purpose was to ensure the stability of the shares.
So that's that was what the jury had to consider in the case of Sean Fitzpatrick. Now, unlike him, the other two accused, Pat Whelan and William McAteer, they are executives. They were executives at the time, and one director of lending, the other director of finance, I think. And so they were in the bank. They weren't away in France when all this was going on. So what did they... Just to take them one by one, first of all, starting maybe with Patrick Whelan, because they had separate lawyers and separate defence teams. What did they have to say? And it was a lot of back and forth, wasn't there, particularly in the early stages of the trial, about the legal advice that was given and people's understanding and whether they could or couldn't rely on the legal advice. That came to the fore, both in the judges summing up, Orla, and also in the address to the jury by the two counsel for defence.
Yes, well, the legal advice was ruled by the judge to be irrelevant to the jury's considerations, as was any advice that they had received from, for example, the financial regulator, whether or not the financial regulator had approved of this transaction or not. Brendan Grehan for Patrick Whelan addressed, I suppose, the elephant in the room in all of this, the collapse of the economy, and whether or not these three men would be blamed for what had happened to the economy and the effects that are still being felt by people today. But he told the jurors that they had to distance themselves from that and that they weren't there to satisfy the baying for blood of the mob. The case wasn't about the collapse of the banks. He made the point that it was about a provision in the Companies Act that had never been prosecuted before. That's what the jury had to focus on. He said that this was a perfectly valid commercial transaction, that the Maple 10 borrowers who gave evidence agreed it was a commercial transaction. And he said that Patrick Whelan had never shirked from his involvement in this deal. Indeed, he made admissions at the beginning of this trial that he had been involved in the lending, that the lending took place, but that he had done so on the basis and the belief that he had taken legal advice, that there was advice approval from the financial regulator, that the financial regulator here and in the UK had both were both aware of the deal, and that an international company, Morgan Stanley, was involved, and that they wouldn't have got involved if there was any question over the legality of the deal. Brendan Grehan said, how could any director meet their obligations under the Companies Act if, as was being said, they couldn't rely on legal advice or the approval of the regulator or a compliance department or the people who worked for them or below them or above them in the bank? He showed a copy of the Companies Acts to the jury. It's a big, fat volume, 3,000 pages long. And he said, how could anybody do their job as a director if they couldn't rely on advice from other people? How could anybody know this off by heart? And he spoke of the kind of man that Patrick Whedon was, somebody who grew up in Dublin's inner city, didn't go to college, went straight into the bank. He said the jury were entitled to find that it was wrong that you could be selectively prosecuted on the basis of an interpretation of the law that allowed you no defence whatsoever. And he asked them to find Patrick Whedon not guilty.
And there was, again, interesting observations from the judge, effectively saying it doesn't matter what the legal advice was, the law is the law. That's what you have to decide, whether the law was broken.
That's right. He told the jurors that the attitude or actions of the financial regulator were totally irrelevant, as was the involvement of Morgan Stanley. This is the International Investment Bank who were involved in executing the deal. He said any legal advice or mention of legal advice was totally irrelevant, and any steps taken by the accused men in relation to whether the scheme was legal or not was irrelevant. And he said that might seem totally unfair, that the belief of the defendants as to the legality or the illegality of the does not matter. But he said that was the law.
And then what about Mr. McAteer's defence counsel then? What did he have to say to the jury in his defence?
Well, senior counsel Patrick Gageby said that William McAteer wouldn't be in court at all, wouldn't be in the dock, were it not for the actions of one man, and that's Sean Quinn. He said what had happened was a terrible tragedy in relation to Sean Quinn. He'd built a fantastic business, employed lots of people, but he'd made a spectacular gamble. And he said Sean Quinn had received an administrative sanction, not even equivalent to a district court conviction, while those who'd had to deal with what he'd done were now sitting in the dock. Now, he said that the circumstances surrounding the loans were definitely not ordinary, but he said the lending was in the ordinary course of business. And this is one of the key issues that the judge told the jurors they had to decide, because there is a prohibition on lending to buy your own shares, but there is an exception if that lending is in the ordinary course of your business. So the jury has to decide, was the lending in this case in the ordinary course of the bank's business? He said, of course, the circumstances were not ordinary. The unwind of Sean Quinn's position in the bank was extraordinary, but the prosecution had to satisfy them that the lending was not in the ordinary course of business. He said the prosecution was saying it was a fraud on the market, but there was no charge relating to a fraud on the market. Mr. McAteer was not charged with any such charge. And he said, what was it that Mr. McAteer should have done to fulfil his obligations as a director of the company? What was the step that he hadn't taken? He said Mr. McAteer had laid out his involvement in the Garda interviews. He said he'd been given instructions by the chief executive, David Drummond, had passed them on. He wasn't claiming ignorance. He wasn't blaming anyone else. But he said he couldn't see how it could be said that Mr. McAteer was in breach of his duty.
And there was criticism, as I understand it, Orla, or at least the defence counsel they hit out at prosecution, arguing effectively that they left it a bit late to bring up this argument about a fraud on the market.
Well, they said that this was a new, Mr. Gageby in particular said this was a new case, and the prosecution had alleged this late in the day, that the whole scheme was unlawful, not just the lending. That the prosecution was saying the purpose of the lending was to affect the share price, and that would be misleading people who were looking at the share price of Anglo, because they wouldn't know that the bank had lent money to buy the shares. And Mr. Gageby made the point that this assertion was not in the charge sheet. The men were charged with 16 charges. William McAteer was charged with 16 charges relating to illegal lending. He was not charged with a fraud on the market.
And of course, before the trial ended, Mr. Sean Fitzpatrick had those charges about lending unlawfully to the members of the Quinn family. They were set aside.
That's right. He had originally been charged with 6 counts as well of giving unlawful financial assistance to Patricia Quinn, Sean Quinn's wife, and their 5 adult children. But the judge, after submissions, ruled that he must be acquitted of those charges because there was no evidence that he knew about the lending to the Quinns. And there were 5 Garda interviews with Sean Fitzpatrick read to the court during this trial, and nowhere was he asked about lending to the Quinn family. So there was no evidence before the jury that he knew about that lending, and the jury were directed to find him not guilty of those charges.
So, as we know, none of the witnesses took the stand themselves, but their position was all contained in those recorded interviews with the Gardaí at a much earlier stage. Is that right?
That's right. There's no obligation on anyone to defend themselves in court. The obligation and the onus is on the prosecution to prove a case. So you do not have to go and defend yourself against a case being made by the prosecution. The onus is on the prosecution.
Orla, clearly, because this is a live case, we can't get into the realms of speculation, but just give us a flavour of the atmosphere down there yesterday. I mean, it must have been fairly febrile. And also, what's it like this morning as we await the outcome of in the case of the other two defendants?
Well, it gets to a certain point in the day where people start to wind down and think that we're coming back another day. And that's what happened yesterday evening. Everybody was packing their bags, putting on their coats, ready to go home, believing that the jury would be going home for another night. And then, of course, they came back into the courtroom. It became clear that some kind of verdict had been reached by them. So then, of course, a tension comes into the air when there's a verdict due. The three men were there, their families. The courtroom was packed with journalists outside. There was a huge scrum of photographers and camera people, and the jury forewoman herself was quite nervous when she was telling the court that they had reached some verdicts. She sort of stumbled over her words, and then there was very little reaction in the courtroom afterwards. Mr. Fitzpatrick had been quite anxious earlier and quite wound up, and was going around. He told a group of us that he really fully expected to be convicted, and given those circumstances, his reaction was very restrained. He winked at his legal team, winked at his family. Shook hands with his co-accused, shook hands with his legal team, and then went into a room with his legal team and family, and emerged then a new man outside after he was told he was free to go.
And you described it just now, obviously, Orla, and earlier on Morning Ireland, about that exchange between Sean Fitzpatrick and members of the media covering this trial. What about the other two? Have they mixed at all with people like yourself?
Yes, I mean, they would be talking to people on a daily basis outside the courtroom. People are, there's a group of us who have been here practically every day, and in trials like this, an atmosphere sort of develops of we're all in this together. So they would be friendly. And William McAteer is accompanied by his wife every day, and he keeps himself to himself. And Patrick Whelan would be, both men would be waiting outside court frequently to go back in after lunch or that, and everybody's very friendly and talking about, you know, the case. But then when it becomes clear there might be a verdict imminent or there's some serious legal argument, the atmosphere changes and you can see that people are tense, because obviously it's a long experience for everybody involved.
I don't know whether you have any insights into this or whether the procedures are that are used in a jury room give any guidance, but is it likely or is it possible that they're only now starting today to get into the business of the cases against McAteer and Whelan, having disposed of Sean Fitzpatrick, or would the whole thing be going on simultaneously?
Yeah, that did occur to me, Sean. You never know. That's the answer. I mean, they could have gone through every count already and just have that they've come to some sort of agreement on this particular on Sean Fitzpatrick's counts, and still have the other ones. They've done some work on the other ones, but haven't quite reached the end. As I said, there's sort of a different. There was a different issue to consider in the case of Sean Fitzpatrick. His state of knowledge was an issue in relation to him, because he was a non-executive director, whereas the other two men are executive directors. So it's quite possible they have done some work in relation to Patrick Whelan and William McAteer, and they just have a little bit more to do. Or it's quite possible, as you suggest, that they've spent 3.5 days or so considering just Sean Fitzpatrick.
What might there be a clue in that, to the answer to that question, in some transcripts they look for towards the end of last week?
I don't know if we got it. We were, you know, people always try and analyse what the jury want and what they're thinking when they ask questions. And I don't think that anybody was really able to deduce much from that. They were looking for transcripts of the evidence of Matt Moran and Fiacre O'Neill, two men who were given immunity from prosecution. But I don't think any of us came up with a valid theory as to why that might have been and what light that could shed on the deliberations. And the answer, as per usual, is we really just never know what's going on inside the jury room until they come out and give their verdicts.
So we still don't know if this journey will be over by Easter or not. Orla, thank you very much indeed for that update and that account of events at the Dublin Circuit Criminal Court. Obviously, if there is any development before we're off the air, we'll bring it to you straight away.